It is Tuesday, February 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, New Hampshire voters head to the presidential primary election. Japan's parliament condemns North Korea's recent rocket launch. We'll talk with an analyst about international concerns about Pyongyang.
Frankly, what it comes all down to is whether China will participate or not.
And we remember singer-songwriter Dan Hicks, who died over the weekend. It's all ahead. New Hampshire voters are casting ballots beginning the presidential primary election in the New England state. Some small towns in the Granite State voted overnight. In Dixville Notch, Ohio Governor John Kasich got three votes, enough to beat the two that went to billionaire Donald Trump in the Republican race. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders got all four votes for the Democrats. Kasich and Sanders also won in Hart's location. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton did better in the town of Millsfield, beating Sanders 2-1, while Texas Senator Ted Cruz scored a 9-3 victory over Trump. Ahead of Tuesday's voting, opinion polls showed Sanders with a double-digit lead over Clinton in New Hampshire. In the Republican race, Trump also held a comfortable lead, with Kasich, Cruz, Florida Senator Marco Rubio, and former Florida Governor Jeb Bush in a tight race for second place. Well, for more on the New Hampshire presidential primary, I'm joined by VOA's Bill Gallo, who's in New Hampshire. Well, Bill, at the moment, voters are casting ballots. Are there any indications as to sort of who's leading in the polls and who is not?
Well, no, you know, it's really too early to say. Some of these early polling locations, they have such small populations in these cities. And so, you know, I mean, it's fun to pay attention to. I know Sanders shut out Clinton in a few areas. Kasich bested Trump in another area. But really, it's too early to say.
Have you been able to go to some of the campaign events?
Yes, I have. And I tell you, it's very interesting to see the different levels of energy at the various campaign events and the things they focus on. I was at a Trump rally last night. Of course, it was very high energy, just like all of his rallies have been. It was almost like a sporting event. It was held at the Sporting Arena in downtown Manchester, which is New Hampshire's largest city. So there's a lot of energy. You know, I went to a Ted Cruz event. It was a completely different feel. It was more passionate, I would say, on the issues. It wasn't a celebrity kind of thing. So, yes, I mean, there are small events, there are big events, they're everywhere, and people love them here.
Have you been able to go to any of the Democrat events?
Yes, I did get to go to a Bernie Sanders event and to a Hillary Clinton event. I went to a Bernie Sanders event at a college in rural New Hampshire. And, of course, you know, like most of his rallies, it was mostly young people. But the interesting thing about it was very laid back. I mean, I can't say it wasn't, passionate. These supporters seemed passionate. But it was a very relaxed vibe and very confident. These people really like Bernie, and let's see if they show up to vote.
What so far are, how could the weather impact this, or will it? I mean, is it, I guess it's not known yet. But what role could the weather play in this?
Yeah, well, you know, there was a big snowstorm. Well, it depends on what you mean by big, I guess. For locals here, I don't think it was a big snowstorm, but a decent-sized snowstorm swept through most of the state yesterday and into early this morning. It dumped a bit of accumulation on the ground, you know, something like 10 centimeters, something like that, in certain areas. But I don't sense that this is the kind of storm that is going to keep New Englanders from actually going out and voting today. I think most of the roads will be cleared. In some areas, perhaps in the more mountainous areas of the state, it may be a little bit more patchy, but I don't think it's expected to have a huge impact on the voting overall.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Bill, for speaking with me today. That's VOA's Bill Gallo reporting from New Hampshire. In other news, German Chancellor Angela Merkel held talks with Turkish leaders in Ankara Monday on the growing refugee crisis from those entrapped in Syria, stranded in Turkey, and on the move to Europe. Dorian Jones reports for VOA from Istanbul. The meetings came as distrust builds between Turkey and the European Union.
Chancellor Merkel called Russia's massive bombing campaign in northern Syria appalling and vowed to work with Turkish Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu to ensure Moscow complied with United Nations Security Council resolutions. Ahead of her visit, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan urged European leaders to press Moscow to end its operations if the EU expected help in stemming the tide of migrants into Europe. Following their Monday meeting, Davutoğlu said he and Merkel had agreed on several measures. The Prime Minister said German and Turkish agencies will start working together against people smugglers, adding that working with Germany, Turkey will increase joint police and security force efforts to stop illegal migration. Merkel also announced that NATO could help the EU border security force Frontex. Last week, both the German and French interior ministers voiced frustration with Ankara over its failure to stem illegal migration, despite its previous pledges to do so. Last month, more than 60,000 migrants travelled from Turkey to Greece, a 32-fold increase over the same time last year. Political columnist Semih Adiz says despite declarations by Merkel to share the burden of refugees and Davutoğlu's commitment to crack down on illegal migration, doubts remain on both sides' commitments.
On the European side, we have had statements which clearly suggest that these refugees should be kept in Turkey. It's not clear whether Turkey really wants to address the refugee crisis per se, or whether it is trying to gain some advantages as a result of this crisis in its relations with the EU.
Although the German and Turkish leaders declared that they are now on the same track, observers say differences appear to remain about the control and the use of a $3.5 billion fund the EU has promised Turkey to help it deal with the more than 2.5 million refugees it's hosting. And Turkey's refusal to open its border to tens of thousands of refugees fleeing the Russian bombing campaign in the Syrian city of Aleppo appears only to have made matters worse. The EU has said opening the border is a moral obligation, even as Turkish media point out, Europe tightens its borders against refugees. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
Well, joining me is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky with a look at what's trending.
Facebook's plan to provide internet to Indian users is under fire. The program's called Free Basics, and what it would do is provide free internet access, but only to certain websites. Now, this is a program that Facebook had sought to roll out to a number of different countries around the world. But in India, the telecom authority there has ruled that it violates internet freedom laws. So they've actually asked Facebook to stop using the program. They've banned it from the country. Facebook is fighting that. It's been banned in other countries like Egypt, and so this is set to be a big fight for Facebook in India. India, of course, is a huge market. Millions, if not billions, of internet users in India with a population of over a billion, a huge potential market for Facebook. So more to follow on that as Facebook battles Indian telecom authorities. And on Twitter, a story that broke earlier this week that caused a lot of buzz has been quashed by Twitter. There was a story reported that instead of getting your tweets chronologically, as many do now, Twitter was going to use an algorithm similar to what Facebook does for their news feed. Now, a lot of people very upset about this, saying that it was taking away from the original intent of Twitter. However, Twitter has said that they are not moving to this algorithm. They said that it's something they were considering, but it's not, as many people were hashtagging RIP Twitter. Jack Dorsey, who is the CEO of Twitter, actually came out and said, "Hello, Twitter. I want you all to know we're always listening. We never plan to reorder timelines next week," as many people had wondered. But he doesn't say whether they may do it in the future. So many people upset about that on social media, even though Dorsey's come out and said that they're not going to reorganize the way you get your tweets. But if you do notice that your tweets are no longer coming in chronological order, this may be why.
Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
We know Antarctica is the land of snow and ice and is the coldest place on Earth. But believe it or not, this polar continent was once quite warm due to the different earlier atmosphere. Antarctica was covered with lush vegetation and teeming with a variety of life, including dinosaurs. An international group of scientists, supported by the National Science Foundation, have begun a month-long expedition to Antarctica to look for proof that it may have been where a number of today's species got their start. Most of any fossil evidence of such rich and diverse life is likely buried beneath the continent's incredibly thick ice. But those heading up the expedition will focus their search in areas where rocks containing fossils are more accessible, such as on James Ross Island and others just off the Antarctic Peninsula. They hope to find fossils that date from the Cretaceous through the Paleogene period, some 140 million years ago. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a look back at the career of singer-songwriter Dan Hicks. The Japanese Parliament Tuesday unanimously passed a resolution condemning North Korea's rocket launch Sunday, calling it a serious provocation that undermines international peace, and called on Pyongyang to halt such activities. The resolution also calls for tougher sanctions against Pyongyang, which also detonated its fourth nuclear device last month. Both activities are banned under UN Security Council resolutions. South Korean President Park Geun-hye also spoke with President Obama and Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, agreeing to work to stronger UN sanctions. Sunday, the Security Council also condemned the launch and vowed to take significant measures against Pyongyang. Mr. Obama was asked about the rocket launch during a CBS television interview that aired Monday.
Well, I think we have been concerned about North Korea's behavior for a while. This is an authoritarian regime. It's provocative. It has repeatedly violated UN resolutions, tested and produced nuclear weapons, and now they're trying to perfect their missile launch systems. I spoke with President Xi of China just a few days before this launch about the need to really tighten the noose on them. But what we're also doing is consulting with the South Koreans for the first time about more missile defense capabilities to prevent any possibility that North Korea could reach U.S. Facilities or U.S. populations. This is something that we've anticipated. We've seen a pattern of behavior over them. They're not very good at feeding their people, but they invest a huge amount in their weapon systems.
Well, meanwhile, U.S. defense spokesman Peter Cook said Monday that Washington and Seoul have begun formal discussions about the possible deployment of an advanced missile defense system to which China objects.
The United States and the Republic of Korea have made an alliance decision to begin formal consultations regarding improvements to the alliance missile defense posture, specifically the viability of a terminal high-altitude area defense, or THAAD, system operated by U.S. Forces Korea. This alliance decision was recommended by General Curtis Scaparotti, Combined Forces Command and U.S. Forces Korea Commander, and senior government officials of the Republic of Korea. The goal of the formal consultations is to bilaterally explore the feasibility of THAAD deploying to and operating on the Korean Peninsula at the earliest possible date.
Cook says this is a purely defensive system and it poses no concern to anyone, including the Chinese. Meanwhile, a senior U.S. official told Reuters China agrees to any new resolution should include additional sanctions. But Washington is urging China, the North's chief ally, to do more. The Korea Society's Stephen Norper, however, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty a decade of sanctions has so far failed to dent the North's nuclear and missile ambitions.
One needs to think how those could be tightened, and certainly that's the subject of much debate in the UN. It's the result of recent legislation on the Hill is such that tightening seems to be what U.S. lawmakers would like to see the administration do. But really, there's a question about the efficacy in terms of where they really can hit the North Korean regime, and it would seem to be financial controls, but frankly, what it comes all down to is whether China will participate or not. And if China, which impacts upwards of 90% of North Korean trade, decides not to carry through with sanctions, then sanctions are basically rendered ineffective.
President Obama spoke with his Chinese counterpart just last Friday on CBS television Monday. He told the Chinese leader about the need to really tighten the noose on North Korea. Will that bear any fruit?
Well, the U.S. administration has pressured Beijing very hard, especially since the January 6th nuclear test, and it's been very active diplomacy. However, China has been less responsive, perhaps because of heightened tensions in the South China Sea. And Beijing has expressed concern and common cause with the United States in private discussions, but doesn't seem to be willing to take the extra step the administration would like. There's also a question about the degree to which Chinese do, in fact, influence what happens in Pyongyang. There's a difference between having a large share of trade, having a large amount of fuel and foodstuffs from China going into North Korea, and actually being able to put the thumb on the Pyongyang regime. The other consideration is that right now China may well calculate that with tensions elsewhere, such as the South China and East China Seas, it doesn't want instability in North Korea, and it very much is concerned that instability would arise that would cause a massive humanitarian crisis. It doesn't want that on its border, and it does not want to lose the strategic buffer that it currently enjoys as well.
That's Stephen Norper of the Korea Society. The U.S. Senate is expected to approve the North Korean Sanctions and Policy Enhancement Act Wednesday that aims to expand and tighten economic restrictions blocking the North's access to hard currency. The House of Representatives passed similar legislation last month. The measure could directly affect state-owned Chinese companies which trade with the North. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. American singer-songwriter Dan Hicks, known for his popular blend of folk, jazz, and country music, died on Saturday in California after a two-year battle with cancer. He was 74 years old. Here's International Edition's Steve Norman with a look back at Hicks's career.
Hicks was known as the leader of the acoustic band Dan Hicks and his Hot Licks, which was a contemporary band of the Grateful Dead and Jefferson Airplane in the late 1960s San Francisco psychedelic scene. He never achieved as much mainstream success as others from that era, but he was highly regarded by fellow musicians.
It's a baby with a saddle. It's a cowboy with a saddle.
At his commercial peak, Dan Hicks recorded several successful albums for Blue Thumb Records, including Where's the Money, Striking It Rich, and Last Train to Hicksville. One of their big hits through that period was Shorty Falls in Love, featuring the Lickettes. That's right, the Lickettes, Marianne Price and Naomi Eisenberg, plus the rest of the Hot Licks, Sid Page on violin, Jaime Leopold on bass, John Gerton on guitar, and Dan Hicks vocals and guitar.
Trip Deuce May was so insane we could hardly watch him fall.
Luckily the rain that day was full.
Just as my heart fell the day you became mine, taking memories with you now, we have ourselves a selfless time. As we sped around the world to see who we could see,
but I saw you and you saw me mostly.
Dan Hicks and the Hot Licks disbanded in 1973, and Hicks went on to work in a range of arenas, performing on movie soundtracks and with other ensembles, including the Acoustic Warriors. But he later said life was best when he and the Hot Licks were making music like Milkshakin' Mama.
Well, I went down on the street, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. And I was real hungry.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I saw a malt shop.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. And I was out to know that love.
Love?
Yes, love was waiting for me. As I sat down at the counter with a menu in my hand, I saw what was behind it. I hit a grand slam. I saw my soda fountain, baby.
Soda fountain, baby.
Just the way she said it got me higher than a kite. I saw my soda fountain, baby.
My soda fountain, baby.
My soda jerkin', baby.
My soda jerkin', baby.
I saw the girl who keeps the ice cream. And I was ice cream for her. By the time she brought my sundae, I could not eat a bite.
That is the music of Dan Hicks, and that's our show for today. Please visit our website at voanews.com. And to see all the very latest on the New Hampshire primary, I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
As I paid my check, I wondered, heck, would she ever call me dear? I saw the girl who keeps the ice cream. And now it's time to sleep for her.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Speaking in Kigali, Rwanda, U.S. Secretary of Commerce Penny Pritzker, at the beginning of her visit to that country late January, discussed the commitment of the United States towards strengthening economic trade with the East African community. Secretary Pritzker said, "Today I am joined in Kigali by the group of senior executives who comprise the President's Advisory Council on Doing Business in Africa. Their charge is to provide recommendations to President Obama and me on policy steps we can take to strengthen commercial engagement between the United States and countries across Africa, including how to build lasting partnerships between the U.S. and African private sectors." Rwanda and the East African community have a lot to offer U.S. investors, said Secretary Pritzker. East Africa is the most integrated and fastest-growing regional economic community in Africa. The PACDBIA members, as representatives of the American business community, have had the opportunity to share their perspectives on policies that can foster deeper economic trade ties between the East African community and the United States. As part of this visit, our delegation met with President Kagame for a roundtable discussion on the opportunities presented by regional integration. While we continue to deepen our commercial relationships, our delegation arrived at a challenging moment, said Secretary Pritzker. The United States has expressed its disappointment that President Kagame has chosen to run for a third term in 2017. We believe that respecting established term limits can strengthen democratic institutions and help build a vibrant and free society. The relationship between the United States and Rwanda is deep and mature, said Secretary Pritzker. The depth of our relationship does not mean we never have disagreements, the secretary noted. Rather, the depth of our relationship means that we discuss disagreements openly and candidly, and we work together to address them.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/.